Chapter 25. Tomorrow everyone is mortal. Zephon. Don't look up. The order passed through the defenders, sometimes spoken, sometimes whispered. An order that was easy to give and impossible to follow. Whatever kaleidoscopic unrest had started in orbit was putting roots down into Terra's atmosphere. It affected the ash in the air, thinning it, sucking it up, discolouring what remained. It turned the thinned dust into a stinking mist of faint colours that had no names. As the sky cleared to offer that hazy revelation of mother-of-pearl madness, the stars returned to the nighttime heavens. With the return of the sky came a return of the horizon, and a wider view of the wasteland around the final fortress. For many of the defenders, ignorance had been bliss. The dust had occluded so much of the torture that Terra was undergoing, and masked the odds against the men and women who now massed on the last wall. Zephon felt their despondency as a physical thing, a miasma in the air. It weighed him down as he walked the ramparts. The keep above the Delphic archway was a nexus of weary industry. Armory thralls laboured with hand tools, patching battleplate in dire need of replacement instead of mere repair. Servitors distributed crates of ammunition from the cache chambers established by Rogal Dorn in readiness for these last days. Hammers struck in ceaseless arrhythmia. Welding torches crackled and sparked. Autoloaders clanked as shells were dragged through the guts and up into the throats of turrets. Ceramite warplate, once a proud cavalcade of reds, whites and yellows, was now medallioned with scars and grayed by smears of armor cement. Injuries were stitched, stapled and sealed behind bandages. Pain was banished by narcotic suppressives. Troops on the battlement checked and rechecked weapons, while above them the sky undulated in the thrashing dance of a semi-sentient pantheon. And in quiet corners where loyal human defenders gathered out of sight of the Astartes, prayers were offered up to an absent God Emperor. Tomorrow, every soul capable of wielding a weapon would be on the wall. Hundreds of blood angels, imperial fists and white scars shared the space of what had once been a memorial to heroes of the Unification Wars. Now it was filled to bursting with warriors undergoing final preparations, each one ringed by slaves and servitors. Every chamber and hall and corridor of the Delphic Keep heaved with similar activity, and it was mirrored all along the battlement itself, under the tortured sky. Most Legion officers were still in the keep, after gathering for Sanguinius to give them their last orders. It was a strange feeling, to be surrounded by so many souls, yet to feel isolated from all of them. Everyone was at the very edge of exhaustion. Everyone was fighting their own war now. Orders and organization meant very little. The two armies would lock together and grind each other down until one could no longer hold its ground. There was, the Blood Angel had to admit, a certain comfort in the barbaric simplicity of it all. When it came time for his own preparations, he headed into the keep, where his thralls awaited him. Zephon stood with his head lowered, his arms outstretched, a common posture for Astartes to adopt while being armoured and attended, unknowingly mirroring the sacrificial symbolism of the ancient Catharic's nailed demigod. He said nothing as his thralls did their meticulous work, rinsing his clotted wounds with sterilized sponges, then machining his armor into place. They dressed him, plate by repatched plate, drilling the links into his body, binding the connection spikes with the black carapace implanted beneath his skin. Where he had no skin, where his bionics offered only Dark Age compound metals instead of flesh and bone, his armor was bound through adaptive magnetics and secondary sockets. It was nothing his servants hadn't done 1,000 times before. Their footsteps echoed softly in the chamber. Their lowered voices made an undercurrent hum. Familiar sounds, familiar feelings. Even the sounds outside the chamber were unchanged from when these rituals had been performed in the past. The muffled din of other warriors being armed and armoured, the fainter grind of war machine engines and the earth-shaking rattle of Titan foot treads, muted and muffled by distance. This was the sound of war, no different from the gunfire and crashing of blades yet to come. This was the verse before the chorus. Zephon listened to the war's familiar song, and to his thralls he looked no different than he ever did. They couldn't see inside his skull, where one new thought clung to the sides of his mind, spawning adjacent notions. He was going to die. Acceptance of one's death, the expectation of it and the preparation for it, was hardly alien to the Legionis Astartes mindset. They were a species born and remade to die in battle. Death in war was a certainty. The only doubt was on which battlefield they would take their final breaths. But to know of death's certainty was one thing. To confront its imminence was another. He would die today. And if not today, then tomorrow. Knowing the road of his existence was all but run brought curious clarity. He saw the crucial beats of his life's path again and again, playing out in his mind with a sense of introspective acceptance. No regret threatened to bubble up and swallow him, nor was there any sense of sorrow. He reflected upon the choices and deeds that had brought him here, not with melodramatic intensity, but a sensation of naked analysis.
"The truth is, I died long ago."
And not just one death. He died his first death when injury no longer let him serve in the Legion. A mental death, then. A death of the will and his sense of self. Then he died at Gorgon Bar, saving the interrogator, Kerris Gon. A physical death, the falling debris forcing him into suspended animation on the edge of mortality. Neither death was in battle. Neither was glorious. Neither was worthy of remembrance. Now he lived again, resurrected both times by Arkan Land, first with the gift of these rare bionics, then with the risk of reawakening from stasis, only days ago. He did not know how he felt about any of this. Distractedly philosophical, he supposed. As Shafir patched several fiber-bundle cables of armor musculature in place around one bicep, he caught sight of his reflection in her polished breastplate. It was the face of a blood angel, the face of all blood angels, but nothing in the visage carried a sense of personal identity. He looked at himself, at his own face, and saw just another one of 100,000 brothers. That was the point, was it not? Unity in brotherhood, unity through death, via the Revenant Legion's old traditions, still practiced in the shadows by warriors that wore red armor now instead of grey. Who was he? Was a man the sum of his actions? Was everyone merely the sum of their deeds and decisions? If so, he'd made precious few choices outside of battlefield strategy anyway. He was as much a tool as a man, a weapon as much as a living being. And that made him a cold weapon indeed. That had always been enough. It was still enough. But here, at the very end, what curdled in his mind was the notion that he could have been any one of his brethren, in the very same moment, thinking the very same thoughts. That indivisibility had always seemed a strength and a source of unity, to be merely one of many moving parts in a machine of righteousness. Now it bred doubts. It felt not like unity, but homogeneity. A waste, even. Zephon had lived his entire life down to these last hours, but what separated him from any of his brothers? What made him, him? He stared at his distorted reflection in Shafir's breastplate, knowing that somewhere in that angelic visage was the face of the boy he'd once been, and the man he'd never been allowed to become. But he couldn't see either one. Not even hints of them. Amit. The thought rose unbidden, but he followed its course. Lifting his head, he watched Amit across the chamber, also being armoured by thralls. There was his brother, a brother of the same rank, a man wearing the same face as his own. Amit's skin was darker than his, and the differences were always evident in the scars. No warrior carried the exact same war markings as any of his brethren. Furthermore, Amit's head was shaven, and though Zephon had ordered his thralls to cut his once-long locks, he still kept a dark fall of it. Still, like most Blood Angels, they could have been twins. Amit always seemed so alive to him. Even now, as Nasir stood in silent contemplation, the other captain radiated a presence beyond that of a warrior and an officer. Amit had habits. He clenched his teeth when annoyed, he grunted when bored, and tilted his head to crackle the vertebrae in his neck during long briefings. His eyes were often tense with restrained temper. Amit was his own being, as well as a Blood Angel, defying the Legionis Astartes template in a way Zephon suspected he himself had not.
"Please lift your arm higher, Lord," said Aristes.
He did so, letting the agent servant drill and lock a flex-weave underplate into place along his triceps brachii. Not long now. The call to battle would come, banishing these useless musings. Zephon realized he was breathing slower, louder, through his parted teeth. Feeling the beginnings of battle urge, the ache in his gums that spoke of blood need. His thralls tensed. The scent of their skin became acrid with fear. The warriors saw them share glances among themselves.
"I'm not irritated with you," he said, attempting reassurance.
They didn't ask for further clarification. They knew better. Their bond with their master hadn't encouraged breaches in protocol or decorum, like speaking while they attended him. But Zephon surprised them again, keeping his voice low.
"I see you've been armed."
Three las rifles rested on a nearby crate, each with a bayonet, each with a companion pistol, holsters and leather webbing. They were standard issue, battered enough that their histories showed plain, lifted from the dead and redistributed to the living.
"Have you been instructed in how to use those weapons?" he asked.
"We are familiar, Lord," Shafir replied. "The Legion has trained us extensively over the years."
"I see."
He knew next to nothing of their lives outside of their direct service to him. As far as he'd been concerned, they effectively ceased to exist outside his sight.
"I was not aware."
"It's fine, Lord. There's no reason you would pay heed to such things."
But Zephon kept watching them, fascinated for the first time by the three souls that served him. How old Shafir and Aristes looked now. How much Shenkai resembled both of his parents. He'd first seen Shenkai as an adolescent, a skinny rake of a boy, entering into his service as his parents' apprentice after years spent in the flagship's thrall creches. Before that, he'd known Shafir was pregnant, but cared only insofar as it might affect her duties. To her credit, it hadn't. Thus, Zephon had never needed to offer comment or make a note of any failings. After that, there had been a boy, trailing them around sometimes. But that was all. He knew little about the child. He'd never cared to ask. Aristes and Shafir had been in his service for decades, and before them, it had been Giyu and Shenru Lai, Aristes' parents. How time turned.
"I will arrange for the three of you to be with the fallback forces retreating to the Sanctum."
It was a pathetic offer, granting them only a few more hours of life, and Zephon's skin crawled at the uselessness of it. Once the Delphic battlement fell, the Sanctum would fall too, before the day was done. Hardly much of a gift, yet it was all he could give them.
"I don't want to cower behind the enemy gate, Lord," Shenkai said, his tone edged with what Zephon believed was offence. "I don't want to hide."
"We will die on the wall," said Aristes. "With you."
"And with the great angel," Shafir added. He hadn't expected such courage, and he was honoured by their loyalty. Even so, he wondered if their hearts were truly as set as they seemed. Would Shafir and Orestes not want their son to taste just a few more hours of life, if he had the chance? Or were they proud of him for committing to this death? He didn't have the answer, and didn't want to ask the question. It shamed him to realize how little he knew of them.
I apologize for offering nothing but disinterest in your lives. That was churlish of me.
More discomfort. They were not used to this, and made no reply to it. Now both sides of the halting conversation were lost as to how to continue. Shafir and Orestes lifted his left gauntlet into place, drilling in the connection needles, moving together with the grace of decades of expertise. This task was more than familiar to them. It was a matter of lifelong ritual. He shifted himself in a moment of rare awkwardness, only for Shenkai to breathe softly in irritation where he stood behind Zephon. The thrall was dressing his hair and binding it tightly for his helmet.
"Please don't move, Lord," Shenkai said.
Zephon could practically hear the young man trying not to sigh. Zephon remained still.
"I will likely die tomorrow," he admitted, "and thoughts are occurring to me that I might never have otherwise considered. You have been excellent servants. Thank you for your loyalty to me all these years."
Another of those fleeting hesitations flashed between the three of them. They kept working, but Zephon was aware of certain betrayals in their bearing. The tiny hairs on Shafir's arms rising, the sound of Shenkai swallowing, the way Eurystheus' lips pressed together, deepening the lines at the edges of his mouth. Human things, instinctive signals of discomfiture.
"Thank you, Lord," said Orestes,
after drill-locking one of Zephon's vambraces into place. The warrior couldn't quite read the expressions on his thralls' faces. The only obvious element was their uneasiness with the course of the conversation. As they lifted his breastplate into place, he said,
"Stay close to me when the fight begins. I will keep you alive as long as I can."
He couldn't see Shenkai's expression, but he could hear the way emotion thickened the young man's voice.
"Focus on the enemy, Lord. And we'll keep you alive as long as we can."
In the face of this loyal naivety, Zephon found he had no decent reply. He let them armour him the rest of the way in silence, listening to the music of blood beating through their bodies. Soldiers and civilians and servitors passed by in their hundreds, going about the business of preparation.
"Zephon?"
He lifted his head again, needing a moment to pick out the speaker in the milling crowd. She wore patchwork armour and carried a battered las rifle slung over one shoulder. Like everyone, she was a shadow of herself, ruined by the war, and like everyone still alive in the war's final hours, there was something unbreakable in her eyes.
"Are you Zephon?"
"They have ranged the main line," Zephon said softly, the words sending a chill through him.
His thralls slowed in their work, knowing those words well. They glanced at the source of their master's sudden awe.
"You're Zephon, aren't you?"
The Blood Angel nodded.
"I am."
The woman approached, and miraculously she smiled. A tired smile, but a smile nonetheless. Here, of all places.
"I thought it was you. You all look the same. But you have..."
She held up her gloved hands, opening and closing them, alluding to the Blood Angel's silver bionics. He looked down at the woman with the stringy hair and face marked with grime, knowing her from their first and only meeting months ago at Gorgon Bar. How he had ordered her off the wall before the artillery onslaught began. How he had pulled her against his chest and shielded her when the walls came down.
"Greetings, Kariskon."
"They told me you were dead. Or as close to dead as to make no difference. I accompanied your body to Rezavi Bastion, you know, months ago."
"I did not know that."
The gesture touched him in a way he couldn't quite put into words.
That was kind of you.
Once we got there, they took you for stasis and sent me away. Then later, I heard you survived. I was sure it was just another stupid war story. Another mistake amidst, well, everything else.
Astarte's physiology means that both are technically true. I was dead, and yet I live.
The keep shook around them. Dust clattered against the Blood Angel's pauldron.
I am gratified to see you also survived, Gorgon Barr.
Thanks to you.
Kerris reached up to touch his face. There was no sensuality in the gesture. It was a matter of careful examination. She followed the lines of his cheeks and jaw with her gloved fingertips, the digits dark against the white flesh.
I never saw your face. And you do look like the others. But you're paler. I can just about see the veins beneath your cheeks. And your eyes are lighter. You look gentler than some of the others.
I assure you I am not.
I'll take your word for it.
She was far more confident than he remembered of the wayward archivist from Lord Dawn's new interrogator order. Kerris sensed his unease at being touched, and withdrew with another faint smile.
I'm assigned to the Sanctum, embedded with the 3rd Zaharin Rifles.
Kerris cast a look over her shoulder, where several Imperial soldiers waited with varying degrees of impatience.
I had to say thank you. You saved my life. And don't say it was nothing, because it was definitely something.
You are welcome, Kerris.
He didn't know what else to say. Awkwardly, he added,
truly, I'm glad you are alive.
For another few days at least, he carefully neglected to add. Plainly, she was aware of his clumsiness in such a moment. She took her leave rather than prolong it.
May the God Emperor watch over you, Zephon.
He tilted his head at the phrase, but in an echo of all that her rank would come to mean in the following millennia, her tone brooked no disagreement. She left him with his thralls, looking back over her shoulder once more as she walked away. He never saw her again. He found Arkan Land on the ramparts. The Martian had somehow worked his usual anti-social magic, occupying a section of the wall where few others seemed inclined to linger. Zephon weaved through the edge of the closest crowd, approaching Land's pocket of isolation, apologizing to the Imperial Army soldiers as they shifted from his path. There they stood together, saying nothing, just looking out across the wasteland. It was night, but that was relative. Day and night both looked like violet dusk. The sky everyone tried not to stare at was riven by electromagnetic disturbance, dancing aurorae made from the warp-stained heavens and reflected firelight from 1,000 separate wars on the world's surface. Zephon had seen the atmospheric disturbances caused by massive orbiting fleets in the past, and this was not that. Low to the horizon, where he gazed at the distant horde now circling the sanctum, he could see shapes, nebulous in form and godlike in scale, clawing and thrashing their way through the clouds. The last time he had looked directly upward, the skull of something almost human, the size of half the sky, rolled in the stormy black. Its mandible had been articulated with tendons of smoky cloud. Muted stars gleamed sickly in its empty sockets. Then it was gone, rolling tidally, melting into the thunderheads. Zephon hadn't waited to see what might take its place. A Skitari soldier stood at the techno-archaeologist's side. She too said nothing. Zephon didn't know if that was because she had nothing to say, or because she was one of those who were unable to speak. It seemed to him that most were made that way. Sapien, the Artificimian, perched on her shoulder guard. It was idly running its bizarrely human fingers across scratches in the Skitarius's helmet, as if mapping them. He greeted the cyber monkey with one of the clicking sounds it sometimes made. Sapien regarded him for a moment, repeating the sound, before continuing its appraisal of the Skitarius's helmet. A Titan made its way past, one of the god engines walking its patrol in front of the wall. An Ignatum machine, its red and yellow heraldry excoriated by months of battle and the filth in the air. The ground shivered in sympathy with its slow tread. Power cables hung from its armor joints like stringy veins. Gun arms that could level habitation towers groaned under their own weight on war-weakened shoulders. Irrakundos read the name on its carapace, emblazoned there in corroded bronze. It looked as exhausted as the mortals in its shadow, and somehow as impatient. Zephon lifted his gaze from the Titan, looking down the wall, first left, then right, taking in the regiments at the ready, the depleted squads of Astartes scattered amidst them in splashes of battle-faded colour, and the rarer patches of gold marking the last survivors of the Sisters of Silence and the Custodian Guard. To Zephon's eyes, the Delphic battlement was a hideous thing. A monument to compromise, jury-rigged into a state of ugliness by the pressure of necessity. Before the war, it had been purely decorative, a curtain wall of shining marble surrounding the Emperor's Grand Castle, set a mere kilometre from the inner sanctum's pristine, spired sides. When predicting what shape the war would take when it reached this point, Dorne had done all he could to gird the last defenders against the horde descending upon them. Failsafe after failsafe was in place. The wall was honeycombed with defensive turrets, reinforced with layer upon layer of plasteel and rockcrete, turned into a rampart manned by over 100,000 defenders stationed around the inner sanctum. Custodians, Sisters of Silence, Blood Angels, White Scars, Imperial Fists, Imperial Army soldiers, refugees, civilians. All of them shoulder to shoulder, standing in the shadows of the Titans watching over them. Batteries of anti-air guns lined the wall tops. Titan cradles, set into the Delphic wall, housed the god machines of Legio Ignatum and stood shielded by thick voids, ready to repair their charges once the Titans strode home. Landing pads dotted the rampart's surface, where gunships and low-altitude fighters fueled up and underwent final preparations. A complex order of machine spirits, physically built into the wall's most reinforced sections, oversaw the anti-artillery gunweb, outputting a constantly updating data spray that commanded the movements of thousands of defensive batteries and refractor field projectors. The Delphic battlement stood ready to intercept any incoming fire, whether solid shot or in the form of screaming energy. Added to this, the expressly outfitted warmonger Titan, Malex Meridius, walked behind the defenders, patrolling the span between the sanctum and the battlement, its weapon systems aiming outward, its purpose to shoot down any craft or incendiary that somehow eluded the Delphic batteries. As magnificent as this sounded, Zephon wasn't blind to the reality of what they faced. The horde soon to descend upon them would sweep through this mighty gathering in mere hours. There were too few defenders and too many of the enemy for it to go any other way. The weakness was the arch. The Delphic archway, the battlement over the grand processional, hadn't been built with considerations of defence. It was planned for parades of soldiers and titans to march along the processional, under the arch and through the Delphic battlement, proceeding along the rising avenue of the Royal Ascension. There had been no gate to close, no barricade to raise. For decades it was an open mouth leading right to the Eternity Gate. During Terra's preparations, Dorne had commanded his warrior engineers to install layered portcullises to block the processional, reinforce and shield them to the limits of the Mechanicus's ingenuity, then construct a fortified keep on the archway above. This keep was little more than a weapons platform, a cathedral dedicated to the death of enemy titans. The Warmaster's horde would assault the wall from every direction, but the fighting would be thickest here, where the battlement was weakest around its newly armoured arch. The defenders had garrisoned the lion's share of their strength in readiness. Even the approach to the wall would carve the horde apart, with minefields and artillery and defensive turrets all turned towards annihilating anything coming up the grand processional. Tens of thousands of the invaders would die before they ever reached the first portcullis, and two more waited behind the first, each one of them 6 meters thick, each one forcing a killing ground where the defenders could pour fire and scorn down as the attackers sought to breach the barriers, one after the other. Zephon gazed from the wall to the wasteland beyond. The ground was turning sour. As if the land being dead wasn't enough, it was darkening with corruption, twisted into jagged promontories and earthen spikes. Bombardment craters were becoming pools of steaming organic sludge. To look upon it hurt the eyes, the way it made your skull throb to gaze into the warp while in void transit.
How could they fight for such a thing?
Zephon wondered, staring at the horde gathering at the horizon.
How could they want this? Because they believe it's necessary.
He answered his own question, knowing it must be true, without understanding how it possibly could be.
What have they learned? What have they seen to believe all of this is necessary?
The silhouettes of Titans towered above the invaders' lines. They were bringing more up through the broken ultimate wall every hour, gathering for the final assault like a pantheon of hunchback gods. Dorne had done well to restrain himself, maintaining so much of Ignatum's strength around the sanctum in readiness for these last days. But even the god engines in Martian red that walked beside the Delphic battlement were already outnumbered. As for the Titans that stood in vigil above the horde, they cast strange silhouettes, their spines bent into new postures, their heads showing faces of malformed, incomprehensible significance. Some of them looked to be made of as much flesh and bone as sacred iron. Others leered as they watched the wall. Even at this distance, they radiated an aura that felt sickeningly feral. And above them, the night sky.
Don't look up.
He returned his gaze low, beneath the horizon. Zephon voiced none of these thoughts to land. There was comfort in the quiet presence of someone who was, if not a friend, then at least a compatriot. He and Land were bonded in a way largely unrelated to war, and in the Blood Angel's life, that was a rare thing indeed. He treasured it, even if Arkan was a singularly difficult man to love.
"You're doing it again," Land said with a sneer.
Zephon leaned on the battlement wall, resting his gauntleted hands on a merlon.
"I do not know what you mean."
Land narrowed his eyes, which were squinty little holes in his face at the best of times. His cracked goggles were lifted up, resting on his sweaty forehead.
"You're staring out at the world with that look of pitiful soulfulness. It's tiresome, Zephon, it really is. How earnest you are. How sincere. You're practically avataric for your melodramatic legion. And let me tell you, it wearies me more than the fighting does."
"Ah," the Blood Angel nodded. "Forgive me, my friend."
"You see, there it is again. Not, I'm sorry, Arkan, but forgive me, my friend. You were bad enough before, Gorgonbar, but since awakening in the Razavi Bastion..."
Land trailed off, emitting a considering hmm that lasted several seconds. Zephon raised an eyebrow, waiting.
"You're like you used to be, only more so. Calmer, stiller. It's unnerving, you know."
"I have no idea what you mean."
Though Zephon wondered as he said the words whether they were true.
"You realize you're not the only Blood Angel I've spoken to in the last year? I've heard the tales of the Bringer of Sorrow. How hot-blooded you were. The temper, the aggression. When we met, you were miserable over your crippling, and your dulled emotional responses were clearly the result of depressive brain chemistry. But now..."
Land trailed off again, giving another long,
"Whatever. It's of no concern to me. Why can't you just spit at us lowly mortals like Amit does and kick us out of the way, like we're dogs that don't move fast enough for him?"
Zephon almost smiled.
You exaggerate my brother Amit's bluntness.
I'm not exaggerating, and you know I'm not.
The Martian looked away, gesturing to the wasteland stretching out to the dusty horizon.
We're going to die tomorrow, aren't we?
Zephon wasn't sure what to say, which was strange, because there was really only one thing to say.
Yes. If not tomorrow, then within the next day or two. I fear you are correct.
I am always correct,
Land retorted.
But what's this? You fear I'm correct? I thought your kind knew no fear.
His thralls had bound Zephon's long hair back from his face, but he brushed a stray wisp off his temple. He kept gazing at the blurred silhouettes far away in the ash. The Horde was out of the range of the wall guns for now, but within every defender's head was a silent countdown.
We know fear, Zephon said softly. We are merely conditioned to overcome it.
Another silence descended. It was relative. Even on their section of the wall, there were other soldiers talking nearby, gun turrets panning, the wind blowing, and the thunder of artillery echoing eerily from across the besieged continent. But between the three of them gathered there in that moment, four, if you counted Sapien, which Zephon always did, it was a pregnant wordlessness. Land finally turned to him. Zephon could see avidity in the man's glare.
Will this degree of honesty be in the ninth speech tomorrow?
Lord Sanguinius, Zephon corrected gently. And it is my father's place to say what he wishes to say, not mine to guess and offer his words in advance. Have you ever heard the Primarch give a speech?
Arkan Land grunted noncommittally.
It is never what you expect it to be. He does not act the way other Primarchs act, nor think the way they think.
From your tone, this is clearly a source of great pride to you.
Land sounded suddenly tired.
Why are you here, Zephon? What is it you want from me?
The Blood Angel tilted his head, regarding the diminutive Martian with infinite patience.
I will be fighting with the remnants of my former company, the High Host.
Yes, yes, how thrilling for you. And this involves me, how?
Many of our thralls will be with us in a secondary detachment. I came to ask if you would fight with Aristes, Shafir, and Shenkai close by my side.
Is that it?
Lan snorted with typical bluster.
Well, if you want. They were tolerable enough when last we met, and one place on this wall is as good as any other.
I mean it, Arkan. Do you agree to stand with them? To protect them?
Yes, yes, yes. Stop nagging.
Zephon thanked him.
Is that it?
Land repeated.
Is that all you wanted? I suppose you're heading off now.
Do you wish me to stay?
Land swallowed. It sounded as though there was something in his throat.
I don't want to die, Zephon.
The Blood Angel was about to reply, anticipating the Martian's sneer, when the old man suddenly burst into tears. Taken completely by surprise, the Blood Angel hesitated a moment before going down to one knee, bringing him close to Land's height. He didn't touch the human. He knew Land hated to be touched.
I'm too important,
Lan sobbed the words, turning them thick with backed-up emotion.
I have so much yet to rediscover. All those secrets of the Dark Age. I have so much yet to give. So many things I remain uncredited for.
Zephon resisted the urge to sigh. How foolish of him to believe this was an outpouring of anything but more vanity. The Skitaria standing nearby watched in spindly silence, neither awkward nor emotional. Then it touched Land, resting a metal hand on the Martian's shoulder. Amazingly, Land patted its iron fingers in gentle acceptance. Zephon could barely believe what he was seeing. The cyber monkey, which had been crouching complacently on the Skitarius's shoulder,
now hopped onto Land's back and gently trilled at its master. Arkan Land raised red, strained eyes to the Blood Angel.
I'm scared.
To feel fear is to be human. I would think less of you if you were not afraid, Arkan.
Some people spend their lives flinging genetic material at each other, spawning nasty little half-clones of themselves. And how proud they are, as if it were an achievement to have children, to perform the basest biological function. Their heirs are what they pass on to the future. They take comfort in that. Not me, though. I have the quest for knowledge. I have my rediscoveries. Everyone in the Imperium would one day know my name. That's how it was supposed to be. It wasn't supposed to end here, like this. Not with that black tide of horror descending upon me.
Zephon tentatively offered his hand.
Don't touch me!
Arkan snapped, and the Blood Angel withdrew.
What's going to happen tomorrow, Zephon? Do you know?
Zephon doubted Land desired a complete tactical delineation. Besides, what was going to happen was ultimately simple.
They will come at the Delphic battlement with everything they have, focusing their assault on the archway. As soon as they breach the arch or overrun the wall, the fighting will break down into pockets of conflict, reinforced by both sides. They will fight to establish footholds. We will fight to push them back before they can take permanent ground. When the wall falls, the nominated rearguard forces will sell their lives to keep them from advancing into the sanctum for as long as we can. The exception in the withdrawal will be the custodians. Some of them will stand with us on the wall, but many will remain inside the sanctum on guard against unexpected intrusion. When we lose the Delphic battlement, which will happen between 1 and 3 days of fighting, any survivors will have a slim opportunity to wage a fighting retreat along the Royal Ascension. But before the enemy can reach the sanctum, Lord Sanguinius and the custodians will seal the Eternity Gate.
Land stared at him with an expression blending suspicion and unease.
Is that a jest?
No.
Zephon hesitated, half asking in his confusion.
Nothing I have said seems particularly amusing.
They will abandon us outside.
Sometimes Zephon could not understand how a man of Arkan Land's undeniable genius could be so lacking in insight.
We stand upon the walls of the Emperor's final fortress. There is no retreating from here. Yes, the custodian guard will return to the Emperor's side to die with their lord, but not until all is lost here on the wall. We will hold the Eternity Gate open as long as humanly possible, but the Delphic battlement is the last true line of defense. Here we can mass in numbers capable of repelling assault for several days, if all goes optimally well. Here we hold one of the most defensible positions on Terra. Here there remains the faint hope of reinforcement reaching us from elsewhere. All those advantages vanish the moment the enemy reaches the Eternity Gate. No tactics, no strategy, no hope. Inside the sanctum, the fighting will be room by room, chamber by chamber, with warp entities free to manifest at their own whim. It will be a massacre.
Land no longer had tears in his eyes. He looked up at Zephon, his face showing a sort of bleak, detached horror. Here was a man who could untangle enigmas of the dark age of technology that had driven men and women mad, and who had led expeditions into the trapped tombs of unknowable machine kingdoms. But Zephon's calm description of the coming battle drained the blood from his skinny face.
"And there's more,"
he said.
"There's something you're not saying. I can see it in your eyes."
Zephon had taken no pleasure in what he had relayed so far, nor did he delight in what he said next.
"While we hold the sanctum, we are ready for whatever they will bring. But I believe that before it begins, they will try to damage our morale. They cannot break our spirits, but they can wound our resolve and blind us with anger."
Land shared a glance with his new Skitari companion, who emitted a coded bleat of skit speech. Then he looked up at Zephon once more.
She asks what you mean by that.
I do not wish to speak of it, Arkan, in case I am mistaken. I hope that I'm wrong.
Zephon looked across the wasteland, towards the gathering horde.
But if I am right, you will see at dawn.
Lan stared at him again, and again the Blood Angel found he had no idea what conversational gambit the old man would try next. The Skitarius was watching him as well, her stare hidden by a buzzing, recently repaired monovisor across her dented helmet. He could read nothing of her mind. Whatever her thoughts and feelings might be, would likely forever remain a mystery, at least to him.
Tell me, Zephon. Just tell me. Are you scared?
What should he say in such a moment? Should he be Astartes, resolute to the very end, the rock upon which the enemy wave would break? Surely that would inspire the defenders, that level of implacable fortitude. Surely that was his role as a legionary in these last days. Or should he be human? A transhuman, true, but still with elements of humanity. Should he confess to emotions that the warriors of the legions might not ever confess, or had trained themselves not to feel? The answer came to him, bare in its obviousness. He would be a blood angel. Anything else would be artifice.
Yes, he admitted. I am afraid.
Land stared at him, unblinking.
Afraid of dying?
Yes and no, Zephon admitted. I am not frightened by the thought of the blade or bolt that will end my life. I am not afraid of the pain to come, nor of the nothingness that comes after it. But there will be a physical element when the horde advances upon us. My hearts will beat harder, my mouth will go dry, and I will want to run. There will be a flicker within me, that human instinct within the transhuman conditioning, to fall back and preserve my existence. I will feel it, but I will not give in to it. When they say of us that we know no fear, it is because that is the way it seems to those watching us. But we feel fear. We simply do not surrender to it. We do not let it affect our actions. In that respect, we are not fearless, merely brave.
Lan seemed to consider this.
I think if you told me that all you feared was failure, or dying with your duty undone, I might have vomited.
Zephon surprised himself by grinning.
Would that be too poetic?
No. It would be too much like grok shit.
Lan brushed some of the settling ash from his bald pate.
Besides, it's easy to be brave when you're practically immortal.
Zephon couldn't argue with that, and didn't try.
That is a factor, yes. But I will die tomorrow, regardless of Legionis Astartes' genetics. In that regard, I am as mortal as you, and all these courageous souls standing with us on the wall.
The Martian stared at him, trying to see something within the Blood Angel's face. The gaze lasted a disconcertingly long time.
You really believe that, don't you? That deep down you're just like us?
Zephon said nothing. He'd made his case. It stood for itself.
Let me tell you, my Barlian friend, exactly how wrong you are.
Land gestured to the both of them.
The difference between you and me, the difference between my kind and your kind, is that we live, and you exist. When we die, the galaxy loses all our dreams and hopes and ambitions. All we might have achieved is sucked out of existence, never to come to pass. Children aren't born, discoveries aren't made, inventions aren't invented. When someone dies, even one of the puling masses destined for extraordinarily little achievement in their lives, it's an immense loss of potential. And that is tragic, because tragedy is defined by loss. But you, you are a weapon. You were made for battle, and have neither a fate nor a future outside of war. Will you die tomorrow? Probably. You'll die doing exactly what you were made to do, dying in exactly the way you were made to die. What are your dreams, Zephon? What life do you live off the battlefield? What do you contribute to the species except the furtherance of its territory with your ability to shed enemy blood? When your kind dies, Astartes, and let's not forget that it's the fault of your kind that half the galaxy is aflame, but when your kind dies, it's no different from the shattering of a sword. No dreams are lost, no fates are altered. Just a weapon breaking while doing what it was made to do. And that's why you have no right to your fear, Blood Angel. Death means so little to you. Compared to us, you have nothing to lose.
There was no longer any mirth, bleak or otherwise, in Zephon's eyes. There was nothing. His features were bleached, of even the shreds of personality Land had thus far credited him with. And what remained was the angelic template, rendering him indivisible from any other warrior of his legion. Zephon thought on just what to say, or if it was worth saying anything at all. Their association to this point had been defined by exchanges in this vein, the cut and thrust of Land's understandable disgust with genetic transhumanity, Zephon's jocular and sympathetic rebuttals. But now, the Blood Angel reassessed the depths of Arkan Land's hatred, and found he lacked an adequate answer.
Because he's right.
The thought, insidious and fierce, clung tight to the insides of his skull. Land had already turned away, uninterested in whatever Zephon might say in reply. The Blood Angel's armored hand rested with gentle but absolute strength on the old man's shoulder.
Don't touch...
Shut up, Arkan. Just this once. Please, shut up.
Land blinked. Surprise knocked him speechless, which was a rare treat indeed.
It may be that you are right. What you've said is nothing I've not considered myself 100 times before. But I want your promise that tomorrow you will forgo your usual cowardice. You will discard the self-interest that you disguise as good sense, and you will stand with Shafir, Aristes, and Shenkai. I can tolerate your hatred, your spite, and your endless barbs, but I will not forgive cowardice tomorrow. Mark these words, my friend. If I learn that you've left them to face harm after agreeing to stand with them, I will find you wherever you're hiding, doubtless soaked in the perfume of your own piss. And I will kill you.
Land gaped at him.
I will beat you to death with my bare hands, Arkan, with the very hands you gave me. Do you hear me? Do you understand?
Land nodded.
Good. Zephon released him. Now get some sleep if you are able. It will help. And don't look up.
He walked away, leaving Land to flush red beneath the gazes of nearby soldiers. The last thing the Blood Angel heard from Land was an affirmation from the Martian to his Skitarius companion.
He has changed.